Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates, episode by episode, the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly, and joining us this week in the VIP tent is returning VIP, Major Mike Jameson. Hi, Mike.
How you doing, Rob? Major, I love it.
I think you got, I think I probably called you a major last time just because I like the alliteration, and I do try and promote people as they work their way through the series. So the next time you're on, I promise you'll at least get bumped up to lieutenant colonel.
I don't know. I mean, I don't want to have that much. I like major. It's not, I don't want too much responsibility.
Oh, okay.
Like good. Major might be too much responsibility for me, but a major is good. So, but yeah, no, if you want to bump me up, that's fine, but don't expect me to work any harder.
Fair. That's very reasonable. Awesome. So he said Mike was already on the show in season two when we talked about As You Were. Now we're here for season three, episode 15, Bombed, which originally aired on January 7th, 1975. And like I said, since Mike was already on the show before, we already know your history with the show. So let's get right to the episode. It was written by the Dynamite team, no pun intended, of Jim Fritzell and Everett Greenbaum, directed by Hi Averback. The 477th is trying to tend to wounded and carry out normal duties, all while being under heavy shell fire. Tensions run high, everyone is scared, and Frank isn't helping by loudly insisting he not perform surgery on an injured North Korean. The bombs start landing so close they even blow out the windows of the OR. They also hit the officer's latrine, wounding Henry and leaving Frank disgusted as he has to use the enlisted's latrine. Things keep getting worse. A patient comes in booby-trapped, and Hawkeye and Trapper have to delicately snip the wires, throwing the live grenade out the window. Later, Trapper and Margaret run to the supply shed to get more materials, but a bomb goes off near it, causing some debris to pile up against the door, trapping them inside. Margaret totally loses it, sobbing uncontrollably. When Trapper tries to cheer her up, they share a brief moment, which Trapper takes as a cue for romance. Margaret brushes him off, desperate to escape. Hours pass, night falls, and no one can find Trapper and Margaret. Meanwhile, inside, the two of them snuggle up to keep close and to keep warm. When Hawkeye and Frank break in and find them in that position, Margaret tries to assure Frank that nothing happened. In Margaret's tent, Frank is so unnerved by what he thinks happened, he proposes to Margaret just as a bomb falls. She asks him if he's serious, but Frank runs out of the tent. Margaret calls him a weasel. In surgery, Frank is so rattled that his nerves are shot. Hawkeye takes pity on him, telling Frank that while Trapper tried, nothing happened. Frank, acting like he doesn't know what Hawkeye is talking about, snaps into shape. The bombs continue to fall, so Ritter decides to entertain everyone by reading a letter from home over the PR. Just as he gets onto what's going on with his cousin Ernie, the bombs start all over again. Eventually, though, they stop and things get back to normal. Margaret tries to track down Frank, reminding him of the promise he made to her back in her tent and her refusal to let him forget it. When Hawkeye and Trapper find out Frank proposed marriage, they are quite amused and dig the knife in deeper by saying Trapper will have another shot at Margaret after Frank eventually gets shipped home. All right, so Mike, why did you want to talk about this episode?
I believe, and I'm not totally sure, but I think this episode was included on the famous Columbia House huge VHS boxes of MASH that I subscribed to back in the, I can't remember, early 90s, mid 90s, something like that, before there was anything that we thought of called streaming or the internet. Mm-hmm. And this was the only way other than, taping reruns, which I know that you did too, but I try to tape them all the time, but I can never get them in order and stuff. So I thought this was the only way, not thinking that I would have about 40 yellow, huge MASH VHS cassette holders one day. I didn't think that far ahead. It's almost like a Dear Dad type of episode where it's like just a bunch of little vignettes and not, I mean, there's kind of like an A and a B plot in there, but it's all just like little vignettes, and it's almost a day in the life, except that it's a day in the life of people having artillery dropped on them.
the first thing that occurs to me when I watch this episode is I figure that they must have maybe by having some cheaper episodes produced, that they had a little more money to spend, because I mean they're dropping a lot of explosions.
Yeah, I mean
across this episode. I mean, windows get blown out, the office gets destroyed. I mean, this costs a lot of money because they have to reset everything. It wasn't like they did this as the final episode of a season. This is done you know, somewhere in the middle of the production schedule. So they had to clean all this up, and it's like, that was probably expensive. So I feel like I wonder if when they wrote this script, they realized, okay, this is going to cost a lot more, so let's scrimp on some other episodes and save up the money so we can blow some shit up here on the 477.
And you know they had to be spending money when you actually see the outside, other side of the OR that you almost never see.
Yep.
So yeah, no, it does though. I mean, it's not cheap looking. They don't look like fake explosions. That looks like it's movie quality special effects, especially for 1975 TV. I mean, it doesn't look cheap. You're right.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive stuff. I will say that rewatching this episode, not that I haven't seen it a bunch of other times or just rewatched it again for this episode, but watching it again, it's the kind of show that I see that my opinion of it has changed over time, because when I was a kid and I watched it, the whole angle with how hard Trapper goes after Margaret in the supply shed, I mean, part of the reason I think any of this stuff is anywhere remotely, for lack of a better term, acceptable in our modern view, is that because you never get the sense that Margaret is really under any sort of duress in any way, because she's so capable. But in this whole scene where she collapses finally, she just can't take anymore, and she sobs in Trapper's arms, and then he uses that as a way to try and hit on her. When I was younger, it didn't bother me as much. I knew it was probably not very cool of Trapper to do it. But when I watch it now, I just go, oh, come on. Like, it's just too much. You know, he just doesn't give up on it. And it just makes me feel like, all right. I know that Margaret is being very forceful with him, but she shouldn't have to be. She shouldn't have to worry about this. And it's one of the episodes where there's some elements to it that I just don't think have aged terribly well.
Yeah, this episode, it's good in a way because Trapper gets a lot more to do. This is one of the episodes
where that's true, yeah.
More to do, and he has more of the spotlight. And that was one of the, you know, watching it again, that was one of the main things I was going to bring up. I mean, basically, like, Trap, no, like, read the room, pal. Like, come on.
Yeah. Yep.
And like you said, it's a sitcom from the 70s based on the early 50s. So, and that's not making excuses for it. Yeah. And Trapper knows that she has a crush on him. And again, that's not making excuses. It's been established that she kind of likes him. But the whole situation, yeah, watching it again, it's like, all right, now, and again, by the end, when right before they're found, I don't feel like she's in any kind. In all honesty, if he probably really did try something, she could probably break his nose if she
yes.
wanted to. And there's some funny bits in it, but yeah, watching it now, there is a bit more cringe to it than when I was watching it for the first time 20, 25 years ago.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that it is fun that Trapper gets something to do, because this seems like the kind of thing that Hawkeye and Margaret would have done. They would have put them together, because this became so much more Hawkeye's show as the series went on. But it was nice to have Trapper something to do. But once – to me, it's like – I mean, I'm not going to keep going on about this, because it's the episode is the episode. But, I mean, once she says no, he's got to stop at that point. Mm-hmm. Like, you shouldn't have even done the first one. But
yep.
Nevertheless, like, after she says – after she physically pulls herself out of his arms – and then he keeps trying about – it's like, Trapper, come on, buddy. All right, knock it off. But okay. I mean, we're going to deal with that. That's the plot of the episode.
I was going to say it's wrong. I mean, it is part of his character. I'm not saying that it's right. And I like him as a character, and it is part of his character. But it's not out of character that he keeps trying. I mean, as soon as she says no, I mean, he's making excuses saying, you know, we're stuck in here. We have nothing else to do. But it's like, all right, like, she's obviously not in that mindset. So you know what? Just stop.
Move on, buddy. Come on. It is kind of amazing, though, that nobody thinks to look for Trapper and Margaret all night until the morning.
Like, I mean, that's one of my questions. I was going to say, watching it again, I never knew if when they're in the tent and they're watching the movie, if they just had coverings to make it dark because they were watching a movie, or if they were locked in there the whole night, because it's obviously daylight when they find them and open it up. So, yeah, I mean, you would think it's not that big of a camp. You would think that they would be able to find them somehow, or maybe think to look in there.
Yeah, right. Especially when they said they were going to go get supplies. I mean, they even tell everybody where they're going. It is sort of funny that this is one of those episodes where MASH moves things around on the camp when they need it to be, because sometimes the supply shed or supply tent. They've sometimes called it a shed. Sometimes they call it a tent. But other times you can – it's clear that the supply area is connected to the hospital.
Yep.
You could tell by the way they go in and out of doors. And then here the shed is clearly a separate building. You know, that exists somewhere else in the camp that you know, has its own door, has its own thing. So it's like the supplies are wherever the writers need it to be and where they need to be at any given moment.
Of course.
Which is, you know, I mean, that's just that you can't pay attention to stuff like that because that's MASH didn't really bother with it.
With MASH, I mean, you always have to headcanon it. At least I have to. So you got to figure this is early. They've only been there maybe 6 or 7 months. So, you know, after that, they had to move a bunch of times, and they finally figured out, why don't we just connect it right to the OR? We don't need a separate shed. This will be easier. Nobody's going to get locked in. We're not going to have to ask questions if they're locked in with Margaret. It'll be all
yeah, that actually – right, yeah. If you want to no-prize it, you could say that, yeah, after they bugged out a couple of times, they realized mm-hmm. the supply – we can just attach the supply shed to the rest of the hospital, which makes a lot of sense actually.
Yeah.
And even though we're going on about how bad Trapper's behavior is, there's some kind of even worse behavior because we get Frank at his most xenophobic when he did – there's the whole scene about where he doesn't want to operate on a North Korean. And he even – God, he calls the guy a slant-eyed yellow devil.
Yep.
I mean, good Lord, Frank. I mean, even Hawkeye, he doesn't let it go. I mean, he insults Frank, but he doesn't specifically comment on that. But it's like, man, Frank, geez, Frank, why, you know, like that's even for Frank, that's pretty bad. And we also, again, get another great example of how awful a doctor he is because they bring that patient in and the guy's got a wire across his chest. And there's this brief moment where you see Frank literally put his finger right on it. It's like the exact thing you would – it's like telling a little kid, you know, don't pick up that glass. Don't pick up that piece of broken glass. And the kid heads right for the glass to put it in his mouth.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, Frank, how stupid can you be?
Well, I think with that, doesn't Hawkeye say to him, let me – or he calls himself a round eye go and work on him.
Yep.
But, and it's also good to know that, you know, this was made 40 years ago and it's supposed to be over, like, you know, almost 60 years ago. And it's so good to know that attitudes have changed. I mean, the leadership in this country, you would never hear anything like
that. Oh, yeah, no.
Yeah, but no, he's just at his worst. I mean, of course, whenever there's like danger and there's all kinds of stuff going on, Frank's going to be at his worst. So this is not good. I would not want to be brought in and be one of the people who had to look up and see them getting ready to put me out and seeing Frank getting ready to work on me in a situation like this.
Yeah. Can I wait? It's like in a later episode, the Korean surgeon in season 5, the patient will even say, can I just wait for somebody else? Because
right.
He just realizes Frank is just a terrible doctor. Casting-wise, I wanted to mention a couple of the actors that appear in this episode. The main guest star, if you could call her that, is Nurse Sanchez.
Yes.
She gets a recurring thing where she seems to sometimes speak English, sometimes not. And she was played by the actress named Louisa Moritz. She had a lot of credits. She was in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Roger Corman's Death Race 2000, The Nine Lives of Fritz the Cat. There's a credit. New Year's Evil, Chained Heat. She passed away in 2019, so just recently. So this is her only appearance on MASH, and this is the only shot we have of Nurse Sanchez. And then Edward Marshall, who plays the – I think he's an unnamed character, but he is the military guy, the army guy that Radar talks to. And he's the one who says, it's impossible. You're not being shelled, young man. He was in a bunch of movies. He was in Fun with Dick and Jane with Jane Fonda. Love at First Bite with George Hamilton.
I saw that in a drive-in as the double feature of Young Frankenstein.
Ooh, that's a good. That's a great combo. That's a great double feature. Well, that's a good programming on the theater owner's behalf there. Jackson County Jail and the wonderfully terrible Oliver Stone horror movie The Hand with Michael Caine, where he plays a comic book artist whose hand gets severed and the hand comes alive and kills people. It's an awful movie. I don't remember him in The Hand, but I wasn't looking for him either.
With Michael Caine, did he have to pay for like another one of his houses? Was that like before or before when he
– I think he was just like – I think he even admitted that back then, that he was just saying yes to everything at that point. So yeah. Actually, I profiled The Hand over on 13th Dimension in my Real Retro Cinema column. There's a, not to get off MASH here, but it's kind of a fun movie, but it's not a good movie, but it's a fun movie. I'll put it that way. And it's got some nice Barry Windsor Smith artwork in it, so there's that too. A couple other details. Henry talks about when the mess tent gets bombed. First of all, in the mess tent bombing sequence, they do the classic old-timey joke where Henry is buried and Klinger says, "Colonel, if you can hear me, knock once. If you can't, knock twice." And then there's two knocks. And he goes, "Oh, my God, he's dead." That's never, right out of vaudeville, that joke.
Yeah, it never fails to make me laugh. It's not stupid, but it's a corny old-timey joke, but I love the way Klinger sells it. So it's very fun.
It's the kind of joke that when you first hear it, you just make sense. And then you listen, like, wait, what? You know, like, that doesn't make any sense.
And isn't this the second time that that Colonel Blake's been in the latrine and it's gotten bombed? When his wife finally, I don't mean to bring the show down, but I mean, she's, you know, when she's going through his effects and everything, when they take care of that after this season is done, he's going to have two purple hearts, I think, from latrine bombings that they're going to have to send to her.
Maybe so. That is a grim thought. But he has a line about his toothbrush. His toothbrush gets destroyed, and he says, "I have teeth like Turan Bay." And that line still is confusing me. You know, Turan Bay was an old-timey 1930s, 1940s character actor. He was of Asian descent, I believe, and he was kind of a handsome guy. And I look at him, and like his teeth look normal, so I don't get what the Turan Bay's teeth line is. Like, he's not memorable for having bad teeth or something. So that line has never made any sense to me. But nevertheless, Henry has it. And then there's a nice little in joke where we hear on the one point when they're playing the radio, they're playing the Bob Hope Show. And you hear an announcer say, "This has been the Bob Hope Show," and he goes through the names Bob Hope and, you know, all the other people on the show. And then it ends with, "And yours truly, High Averback." Now, of course, High Averback is the director of this episode, and High Averback was also the radio announcer for Bob Hope.
Yes.
He managed to stick that little credit for himself, which is really fun. Like, what an interesting career to have been a radio announcer and move on to be a TV director. Good for him.
Yep. That was pretty cool. I always remember hearing that part all the time. And then, you know, when you start getting into it, and as you say, I don't know how many times I've seen this episode, and then noticing that that's who the director was, I was like, oh, okay, there you go. So
yeah, but that was fun. Another historical appearance is we hear from Soul City Sue, who was a real person. Soul City Sue was an American of a woman of Asian descent who then later left America and moved over to China and did propaganda for China and for North Korea, and would say things like, you hear her on the show talk about, "Hey, American soldiers, you're fighting for Wall Street and your wives are being unfaithful to you." And that was a real person. She seemed to live a relatively mysterious life. She was supposedly died in 1969. Apparently some other guy wrote a book and said that she was assassinated by rogue agents or something. And no one seems to know whether that's true or not, because she just disappeared. And during the scene with Soul City Sue, Mulcahy gets upset and says, "Not true, don't true, don't listen to her." And they turn off the box. But Soul City Sue was a real person. And she actually makes a reappearance in a season 5 episode of MASH, where she brands Hawkeye a war criminal. So she was a real person. It's kind of amazing to think that someone would come from America and then go back to the other side just to be a propagandist. But nevertheless, she was a real person.
And that was – she only comes back for one other episode. I always thought that it was a couple. I mean, I wasn't sure, but I always thought she was on a couple other ones. But I do remember – him being branded a war criminal, so I do remember that episode. But
she comes back for they might have another one, but I don't think she says it's Soul City Sue. I think but specifically she talks about who she is in at least two episodes total. Later on, the scene in the shed where they break Hawkeye and Trapper out. I don't know if you noticed this. It's weird. There's a deleted line. There's some line that they took out because Hawkeye says Hawkeye says the Book of the Month Club will never find me because of them. And then you see Trapper kind of like slap Hawkeye on the chest a little, and he says something, his mouth's moving, but there's no audio. And so I don't know why they took that line out, but they didn't ADR it. So yeah. You just see him kind of, and then that's it. They move on. So I don't know what that's about.
Yeah, I was wondering that. That was another one. When you start watching these episodes again and again, I always was like, what was up with this? Because
yeah.
I think what he says to him, he says, go where or something like that. And then you see him say something, and then Hawkeye says, oh, the Book of the Month Club will never find me. It's just like, yeah, it's weird. I mean, I guess maybe they just didn't think the line was funny or added anything to it and took it out, but you can obviously see him talking to him. So
yeah, MASH did a ton of ADR, so you'll know why they wouldn't bother doing it there, but for some reason they didn't. And then later on back in the swamp when Hawkeye and Trapper and Frank are packing, and I love that Hawkeye and Trapper know that Frank is sensitive to the idea that something happened between him and Margaret, and they dig the knife in further when they whisper to each other, and they know that Frank is looking at them, so they purposely whisper. They're probably not saying anything, yeah. And Hawkeye does that little giggle, like yep. they're two teenagers, and they're just being such dicks to Frank. I mean, I know it's easy to be a dick to Frank, but nevertheless, like, they're really sticking the knife in on the poor guy.
I love that whole scene though too, because he first get the two bottles, and he says, "Here, we'll each take one of our children, just in case we should yeah. take a separate jeep, just in case we can each have one of our children." Then he talks about, what's he say, are you taking your nudie magazines? And he says, I'm reading the cereal. She's smuggling out pistachio ice cream.
The sunburnt fool.
That's right.
I believe is the.
And of course, with the toilet paper, when he says, when fear is here, I want fear.
I love the idea that the nudie magazines have stories you could read.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's why we're buying them, is to read a cereal and then going on there. And then said, following that is the long scene where Margaret and Frank talk about that he gets so concerned. And again, Margaret kind of sticks the knife in a little bit too. Like she doesn't really come out and say that nothing happened between her and Trapper. She could really just allay his fears, but she doesn't. She kind of plays coy a little bit, and it gets Frank so upset that he proposes marriage. And I never tire of talking about the different syndicated versions. In the syndicated version that I grew up with, this whole scene is missing.
Yes.
This entire scene is missing. And so in the syndicated version that I saw on Channel 29 in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. when Margaret says, he said something to me, I'm not going to let him forget it. And they're like, Frank, did you propose? That's the first I was hearing of it. I was like, he did? I didn't know that. So it's so weird to me how sometimes the syndicators cut, 5 seconds out of multiple scenes, or sometimes one giant scene. And this is kind of like, this is a big moment in the show. I'm surprised they cut this scene out. It's kind of important.
Yeah, it does drive along one of the main plots. And I, of course, grew up watching the same ones on the same channel. So,
right.
Yeah, when I first got the DVDs, I was like, wait a minute. Like, oh, okay, now I get it. Now I understand. And there's good lines in that scene, too. It's when she tells him he does have a certain je ne sais quoi. And
he's right.
Like, well, of course, he probably went back. I can't remember. He spoke Spanish to her, did he say?
Something like that, yeah. Again, I would love to know, like, who was in charge of snipping these episodes and, like, what this – I imagine it was not somebody particularly creative. It was just somebody that was like, look, I got to hack this down to 23 and 5 seconds or whatever it was. So it's very, very strange. But, yeah, it's a big moment between the two of them. I mean, Frank – he straight up proposes. I mean, that's a kind of a big thing for Frank. I mean, that's how desperate he is. So again, later, as I mentioned, they have the scene where the bombs have stopped momentarily. Everybody's considering their moments. Henry hears Soul City Sue, and he talks about, would Louise cheat on me? No, there's some guy at the bus. Now, of course, we know that Louise already has cheated on Henry at this point. They have already established that.
He's cheated on her. So.
And he's cheated on her, right. Yeah, I don't, But, I mean, he's more worried about that it's, the bus boy. He repairs golf cart. Nah, he wouldn't do that. And stuff like, he's got dirty nails. Or he's digging one finger in his ear and stuff like that. So they finally get that's turned off. Radar reads the letter from home, which about the car, about your cousin Marilyn. No, about Mary Sue next door. Yes.
Yes. And the dog three times in the bed. I can't remember the cat. I'm sorry.
One time on the cat. About the cat. We don't have, one anymore.
Yeah.
Now, again, and then this is later on back in surgery, the scene with Hawkeye and Frank is actually really sort of touching, mm-hmm. in that Hawkeye care. I mean, part of it, he wants the patient to come through. He knows that Frank has to really be Frank on his best day is not a good surgeon. So you need Frank at his full attention. But it's actually one of the rare kind of honest moments between those two of them where they're not just hating on each other, where he looks at, you know, Frank and he's like, Frank, Trapper tried, but no dice. And it's yeah, like, I mean, it's a really nice little scene of Trapper to do that, for Hawkeye to do that.
I think it was nice. I think it was more that he wanted the patient to come through, but it still was nice. I mean, if they know that, they should always try to make it that somebody's making a pass at Margaret, because he looked like he was actually a competent surgeon after that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because you see him like sort of snap into it, and he's sure. Getting the anesthetist and everything else. He's, you know, yeah, he's probably the most competent he's ever been at that point. So, but they said the bombs fall again, and then they blow out the windows again. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing sequence where you see everybody. The light shoots in and everybody, and there's this chaos. It's like, again, it's very well staged by High Averback. I mean, MASH didn't really get to do a lot of action scenes too much, but this is all very well done. And like you said, it's for a 1975 sitcom. They probably didn't have a ton of money to spend. It looks pretty solid.
Yeah, I think they were able to shoot out on the ranch, which probably helped them because they're not stuck on a stage or on a set. And I think they were shooting on film. I believe. I think they didn't start shooting on video until like season 7. I mean, you could always kind of tell the difference. So yeah, I mean, it just makes it look good. And even that scene that you were talking about right before that, I think it's one of the first times. I mean, over the 11 years of MASH, they would always pull the "Hey, listen to that!" You know, the shelling stopped, and you kind of think, "Oh, this is where it's going to end," and then it starts right over again because it seems like that perfect. You know, Radar's doing the is reading the letter, and you think, oh, this is going to be kind of that like funny ending where it's going to get peaceful, and then it just starts right over again. So it kind of, you know, it subverts your expectations a little bit.
Yeah, it's overall a very, very solid show. Amid the mid-season shows where there are some quote-unquote, you know, bottle episodes. I mean, almost all MASH episodes are bottle episodes at a certain point because they never leave the camp. But, I mean, this is, as I said, it's an expansive episode. It's an action episode, and it's fun that they just shake it up like this to have sort of this big action sequence. And, again, understanding of, like, they had the earlier in the season, they had OR, where they show you the stress of it, but they really didn't get into, like, how much the doctors are themselves under threat. And here, you know, they're leaning on that very heavily of like, yeah, this is they're close to the front. And here's where that really becomes a problem, where they are in the middle of being bombed. And of course, you know, even in the Geneva Convention, you are not supposed to bomb hospitals no matter what. But of course, that things happen in war, and it doesn't, you know, in the chaos of war, things happen. And so
and they would return to that. Over, and that's another trope that they would actually return to with the, you know, friendly fire.
Yep.
And all that kind of, and another interesting thing that they touch on is with Sanchez, where you see she's so nervous in the beginning.
Right, she's hysterical at one point. She cries at one point, gets so hysterical that Margaret slaps her, and then she slaps right back out of reflex.
And Hawkeye shows, I like that scene actually too, where she says, "You're not scared," and he holds his hand out, and she says, "You are scared." But then by the end, when the patient that Hawkeye has dies, and, you know, she says, "Is he dead?" And Hawkeye says, "Yeah, just take it easy." And then you could see she goes, "Okay, Klinger, next patient," where you just become, you know, and it's showing it, and again, in a bottle episode. But, I mean, you become desensitized over time. It's just, I'm sure your first day and you're seeing all this stuff, by the end of your first month in a war zone, you're probably like, "Okay, just bring in the next body. This is what we do. This is what happens." So I always like that too.
It's a nice turn for the character, for someone who's just the guest star in an episode. And like I said, we'll never see her again. It's a nice little moment for her, because they let that High Averback lets that moment hang for a second. I'm glad you pointed it out. I didn't have it in my notes. But yeah, when she says, "Klinger, next patient," and they just let it sit for like a full beat to understand. It's like, yeah, she's already like, "Oh, okay, that's what it is." You know, like, you can't get that wrapped up in this because you have to move on to the next patient. So yeah, it's a really solid moment for that character. So overall, do you have a particular favorite line or joke from this episode?
You know what? There are actually, and there are a lot of good one-liners in this, but the one that always actually gets me is when Margaret and Frank are talking and she's combing her hair. And she says, "Well, if I'm going out, I'm going out with a clean scalp." I don't know why.
Some things are just too important, you know? I mean, you just gotta I like the detail in that scene too, where you see her tent has been fortified.
Yep.
Like there's sandbags and stuff. That's a nice little detail that somebody came in and did that. I thought that was pretty cool.
I always felt like the earlier seasons of MASH always were more up on those details, whereas later ones, and I don't think it was lazy, I just think they were more established, so they didn't have to really worry about it. But the earlier seasons always, I felt like, had those little details with that kind of stuff. And then the later ones, I don't know why, it's an observation where it didn't seem like they put that much thought into it as much. Into those later seasons. But that'll be when I come on, like, for season 9 for an episode, we'll talk about that.
Exactly. Yeah, we'll have to examine that when we get to the later seasons. My favorite joke is not even a particularly funny joke by itself, but it is something about the way it's performed. I love it when Margaret and Trapper are in the supply shed and she's rattling off the stuff they need, and she's like, this and that and this, yep, and that. And then she says, oh, and Pierce needs rubber gloves. And Trapper just goes, mostly to himself, clothes horse. Again, that line by itself, not that funny, but I just like the way that Wayne Rogers delivers it. Mm-hmm. It's just sort of like, it's kind of to himself, really. He doesn't really say it. He says it loud enough that Margaret could hear it, but he's never really saying it to her. And right. It's almost like he's making himself laugh as that he's knocking his friend. There's something about that that makes me just chuckle, because it's just something to close horse. He's just like, he's annoyed at Hawkeye for no good reason. It makes it very, very, very funny to me.
Yeah, it works. It just, again, like you just said, I mean, you could tell, like, he's doing it because in his mind, he's making himself laugh because he's making fun of his friend. And that's, you buy that. You buy that relationship between the two of them.
Absolutely. So, yeah, Bomb to said overall, it's a solid episode for season 3. There's some nice effects, some nice excitement, and overall, it's a really, really good show. And it also features, I didn't really mention, and we've talked about that Klinger and Mulcahy are in it, but they're not in all the season 3 episodes, and so I like it when they get worked in. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they would, you know, Klinger would be promoted to a regular in season 4, then Mulcahy in season 5, but I mean, there are episodes this season where they're not in it at all, and so I like it when they get worked into the larger framework, because I'm always happy to see them in there. So, yeah, Bombed, it's a really, really good episode. So, Mike, thank you once again for coming back to talk about this episode in MASH in particular. You know, I always enjoy talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you for allowing me to be on this show, Bob Dylan shows. It's great. Thank you very much.
have you done another podcast outside of ones with me yet?
I have not. Rob, you're my one and only.
Oh, well, this is a lot of pressure for me to withstand. But okay, you'll know that
Dag is going to get jealous, but I'm not. I am not running around behind your back. I'm staying true.
I appreciate that very much.
It's just because nobody else has asked me onto their show. So.
Oh, see, that makes no sense. Come on, everybody. You can hear Mike on MASH and Pod Dylan. He's a great podcast guest, so get on this, for Pete's sake. So
right.
Well, why don't you tell people where they can find you on the internets? Because I'm only asking this because I love your Twitter handle, and I love to give you a chance to relay it to everyone.
I was going to say, I'm everywhere, but yes, my Twitter handle is This Lightsaber Kills Fascists.
Nerdy, but also topical.
Yes, I try.
Fantastic.
That'll be my gravestone. Nerdy, but also topical.
That's good. I like it. Yeah, very good. So, again, thank you once again, Mike, for coming on. I always said I enjoyed talking to you. So, of course, everybody, if you want to follow the show, you can follow it on the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. We're always talking MASH over on Twitter at MASH477Cast. And if you want to support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, you can go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. And there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name-checked on a show of your choice. So a big salute to Adam Sanders, Nicholas Prom, Russell Burbage, Stan Peel, and Suzanne Holland for their support of MASHcast. So that's going to do it for this week. So until the next episode, that is all.
Supplies and a shell hit and the door jammed.
Oh, that's good for starters.
McIntyre, what's the meaning of this?
Frank, does paradise need a meaning?